Hello, welcome to Locked On Sharks, the premier hockey podcast of your favorite team in the Bay Area. And on today's episode, we're going to start looking at the draft, how the Sharks actually did, kind of start to get to know these players a little bit better. So we have on BFF of the show, Will Scouch. He's going to kind of recap the Sharks draft. And then we'll talk about the actual draft itself and being in Montreal. So all that and more on today's episode of Locked On Sharks.
Your Locked On Sharks, your daily podcast on the San Jose Sharks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm your host, Jade Young, contributor at Fear the Fin and San Jose Hockey Now. And I want to thank you, of course, for making us your first listen. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. And of course, you can subscribe on YouTube as well. And today we're going to be kind of looking at the draft as a whole, how the Sharks did, kind of talking about the Sharks draft, which felt a little bit different than what we've seen the past couple of years. But before we get to that, we do have some news. Of course, the Sharks did make signed Luke Kunin and then re-signed Kaapo Kähkönen, both of them to identical 2 years, $2.75 million. Thanks to cap friendly right now, they are currently about $4 million in cap space, but they still have to re-sign Shimolevsky, Gadovich, Noah Gregor, Steven Lorenz, who is going to arbitration with his, and then Mario Ferraro, of course, is the last big contract. So with Steven Lorenz, usually what that means is the Sharks probably offered him a number. He thinks he's getting a number, deserves a number, and they'll go to arbitration. Most of the time they settle beforehand. But yeah, so they'll get that figured out before. So yeah, the Sharks still do have some moves to make, especially with their cap situation right now, about $4 million, and that's not even including a Mario Ferraro extension. And they still have three goalies on the NHL roster. So I assume Aiden Hill, is probably gone. But between Hill and James Reimer, one of those guys is probably going to be gone at some point this offseason, and hopefully maybe Šimek as well to help kind of clear up some cap space. Dakota is making her point known by drinking. So, but yeah, Sharks made some moves. We'll probably continue to see some more of these signings throughout the offseason as they try to kind of get the roster ready to go. But we're not here to talk about the current roster. We're here to talk about the upcoming roster. And there's only one person I wanted to do that with, and that is one, Will Scouch. Will, you have moved on from your own basement to your parents' sewing room. Congratulations. Leaving the basement, or really moving up in the world.
It would be impossible without such faithful Patreon supporters such as you. I now get to live above ground. So thank you very much, JD.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I literally do this for my kitchen table. So, it's from the kitchen table all the time. So
baby steps.
You know, it's funny because when we bought our house, we bought the house in July 2019. That's like when they were building it. And then I started the podcast in 2020. I was like, man, if I had started doing this a little bit earlier, we would have tried to buy a house with an extra room to have an actual real office. But yes, whatever. Anyway, it worked out. So,
there she goes.
So the Sharks, their draft. Very interesting draft, if I do say so myself. We've discussed on air and off air our love of Doug Wilson Jr. and what he kind of does at the draft. And this didn't feel very much like a Doug Wilson Jr. draft, which is probably why Doug Wilson Jr. is not with the Sharks anymore. Correct?
It was a little different. I think the first thing I'll say is I think Sharks fans are kind of like, I hope you guys are all right. I hope you all are doing okay. Because no. I've heard some really dramatic takes coming out of this. And the more I think about this draft class from San Jose, the less I think it's some people are like, oh, Mike Greer, already terrible GM, taking the team in a different direction, blah, 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 blah. It's like, I don't know. When I look at the type of players they've been drafting over the years, I can see how, and we'll get into this a little bit more if you want. I can see how this draft might need to have been a bit of a gear shift into a bit of a different direction. You know, is it always good to sort of go in with the idea of, oh, we're going to change gears and go this direction for this year? I probably wouldn't say so, but I don't know. Where do you want to start? Because there's a lot to dig into here, though, I think.
Well, let's start with the big move, of course, moving down from 11, acquiring a first-round pick and 2 second-round picks, which they didn't have. What was your thoughts there? I mean, I like the move of moving down because, you know, more kind of darts at the dartboard type of thing. And, you know, it seemed like they wanted Kurchinski or Savoy. Both of those guys were taken, you know, one was taken at 7, one was taken at 9. And I guess they didn't love the other guys who were in that range. You know, I was very much on the Brad Lambert chain, but if you didn't want Lambert, you know, like Frank Nazar, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought getting two more swings at, you know, in the second round, and then, I mean, what do you think of that move first?
Brilliant. I thought it was brilliant. Like I honestly watched a lot of hockey this year. And once you got past like David Juracek, I would say the draft just completely opened up. Like I had Marco Kasper, I think at like 19 or 20 on my list, but if he came up at 8 and Detroit really thought there was something there, I could see how, and I could easily see how he could be a top 10 player doing a certain type of thing. And if his development goes really well, then yeah, there's a lot to work with there. And there's, that could be said for a lot of guys, right? Like there was tons of guys where it's like, okay, they have strengths, but the weaknesses are really apparent and there's gaps and figuring out who is better than another player in that range became really tough. And I think it really came down to sort of who you were aiming at. So when I look at what Arizona did, I thought, oh boy, you know, like I thought that Arizona, like if I were them, I would have just said, we got tons of picks. And all these picks are in a range where there's going to be good players available that we are willing to take. And Arizona decided, nah, I think we're going to use some of that, like a pretty significant portion of that, to get our guy. And their guy happened to be Connor Geeky, which when you look at who they drafted, you can kind of, it's like blatantly obvious the type of team that Arizona wants to be. I was on Locked On Coyotes the other day, and we all unanimously agreed, like this was the team they're looking for. Like they want to be a big, tough, physical team. Was whether that'll work and trading all those picks to do it, whatever. But doesn't matter. We're talking about San Jose. And I think San Jose, just getting those picks, I didn't even realize that they didn't have a pick until 76. And then adding all of that value, and the ability to sort of run scattershot and have a bit of flexibility when they didn't have any before, it just made a ton of sense. Like, I was a little surprised when they made that trade that they moved down, what was 16 spots. But
yeah, they went from 11 down to 27, yeah.
Yeah, but getting 2 seconds and getting three top 50 picks is, I'll do it. I'd rather have the volume and just swing on upside. So I thought it was brilliant. I thought it, you know, did they maximize the amount of upside? I think they could have had it every pick. Probably not. But I mean, we can go through them one by one or whatever you want. But I mean, we'll start with Philip Biestead, I guess, because honestly, the more I look at Philip Biestead, and I've been watching him for 2 years, like I could see how down the road there could be a player that is comparable or arguably in some ways better than Connor Geeky. Like, I like the skill level that Biestead has, especially sort of in full flight, moving up the ice, you know, working, getting off the boards and using crossovers and being sort of more agile, whereas Geeky's more of a north-south, like, I'm just going to barrel through opposing defenses. I mean, obviously, Biestead's not there yet, but
yeah,
I guess what I'm saying is that you're not getting that huge of a trade-off. Take it if you wanted a guy like Geeky, you're not getting a huge trade-off taking a guy like Biestead and you're getting him 16 picks later. So that right there, like, and I can see why San Jose would want a guy like Biestead, looking at who they've drafted down the, you know, like I've been on the show before and we've talked about how much they need some depth down the middle, some guys for the future that can play up the middle and play off of guys like Gushchin and Ko and Robbins and Bortolo and all these guys. And you know, yes, I think that size is overrated, but a guy like Biestead with how he plays and where he could be in a few years, like there could be something there that's really interesting. Like I again, it's one of those things where it's hard to see unless you're in person, but Biestead looked very thin. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's a guy who's like 6'3", 6'4". And when he was putting on that jersey, I'm like going,
barely put on. Yeah.
And I watched him put on that jersey and I'm like, man, that guy does not look like he's filled out much at all. And if he does and plays the way he plays now, like there could be an interesting power center there one day. And that's something that San Jose doesn't really have. And he could be a good one. And So if that's maybe a guy that they wanted and they knew he was going to be available in that late first round, which makes sense, and they just picked those two other guys up in the mids in that second round because they were getting their guy anyway, then I don't think it's that bad. You know, could you have aimed higher than Bisted and like swung for upside? I guess there's only a handful of guys where, you know, again, if Bisted came up, I would be like, okay, it's a bit risky. I kind of see where you're coming from. But again, I do this a lot where let's say they took Matthias Havlat at 27, which I think is a more in line with public thought kind of vibe. Yeah. And then they took Bisted at 34 and then Cameron Lund at 45. I don't think anyone would be complaining whatsoever. Yeah, I don't think anyone would care.
Yeah, I think with you got the three guys you wanted, it just happened to be a little bit different order before.
Yeah. Could you have just maybe looked elsewhere, you know, like
we'll get to that in a second.
Get to that in a second. But anyway, we'll see where we go from here.
All right. Before we continue, and of course, we're going to discuss the Brad Lambert. Dakota is not happy with the Bisted pick, apparently. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. Talk to you guys about our friends over at Built Bar. You guys know Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market. They just sent me some new flavors, which I'm excited to try. But right now, they also have coconut brownie chunk Built Bars. They're 100% real chocolate, covered in delicious chewy marshmallow. It's like a fluffy cloud of coconut brownie goodness. And they're also good for you. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and all deliciousness. And if that doesn't sound great to you, go check out their website at built.com. You can get a box with 12 different flavors to try to find your favorite. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off your order. Again, use the promo code LOCKED15. And then once you're all ready to go with that, check out 10athletes.com. So if you and your friends, if you're competitive, you guys, you know, go out on the golf course, you play cornhole in the backyard, even if you're just doing hopscotch in the street, you can find out who is the best athlete, not only in your backyard, the block, or even the world at 10athletes.com. So go on their website, play with your friends, meet new people who like the same sports, have similar abilities. You can play hockey, you can play any sport in real life, and submit your results and find rating changes immediately. If you win, your 10 athlete rating goes up. If you lose, it goes down. So go to 10athletes.com, create your profile. New profiles will be created every day. So get your favorite username while it lasts. From 1 to 10, how good are you? 10athletes.com, where fun must be always. Okay. If Doug Wilson Jr. was running the draft, they would have picked Lambert at 27, right?
You know, I can't confirm or deny. I mean, look, I think...
Yes.
Here's the thing with Brad Lambert, right? Like, yep. We talk about him all the time. I think he's good, but I have not heard a single Finnish person say that they like him. Mm-hmm. And I had this brought up to me at the draft, right? Like, think about it if you're in an NHL scenario.
Yeah.
You go around the table. You go to your Finnish scout. They've seen Brad Lambert 8 times. They hate him.
Yep.
You go to the Finnish scout and they go, "We love Philip Bisted."
Yeah.
You're not going to draft Brad Lambert. It's not going to happen. Even if the crossover guys and other people are like, "No, Brad Lambert's sick." You're not going to go to your Swedish guys who are like, "No, Philip Bisted will be better." And yep. Go, "We're going to go with Brad Lambert." Like, I can see how with the way that the Finns had been talking about Brad Lambert and what they were putting out there about him. Like, I heard nothing but character concerns from Finnish people alone. And my counter to that always is, bro, you should hear about hockey in Canada, right? Like, you want to talk cultural concerns and, like, problematic individuals, right? Yes. Like, we know. But whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, I hope he thrives in Winnipeg. I hope he scores 100 points and proves everyone wrong except people like us. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to say, right? Like, you can't – I get the feeling that – in his heart of hearts, a guy like Doug Wilson Jr. did see the value in Brad Lambert. And if we had the chance to talk about him, I would have screamed from the rooftops about how much there is there to work with, I think. But it's a committee job, right? And the other thing, too, is you have to think about how perhaps powers that are beyond the scouting team would see drafting a guy like Brad Lambert, right? Like, if you hear – all you hear is character concerns and he doesn't score, and you're like, "No, but he's actually good." And you've drafted a bunch of small skilled players over the last few years, like let's say ownership or upper management, they're like, "Well, who's going to be the meat on our team?" Right? Like, who's going to do that? And they might be incorrect in saying you have to draft that type of thing, but a guy like Bisted does become more attractive if you're being pushed in that sort of direction. So if this whole thing is a committee thing, right? Like it's not just like Doug says this, so it happens, right?
Yeah.
There's politics involved, I guess you could say. And right or wrong, like, and again, like at the end of the day, Philip Bystedt, like, if Brad Lambert is a decent second line center and Philip Bystedt is a good third line center, what's the difference, really? The end of the day, it kind of comes out in the wash. And I get the feeling I'm more faithful in Brad Lambert, but I could see a world where Bystedt is perfectly worthwhile at 27.
So who was your kind of, who was the sneaky good pick for the Sharks that you think that they made?
You know, I liked that they took a flyer on Michael Fisher.
Ooh, yes.
I thought, you know, I only got to see two games of him this year. The selection was very limited. One of the games was at the Hlinka tournament, and I thought he was fine, but everybody in that tournament except the Slovakian team and the Russian team were kind of fine. Mm-hmm. He didn't produce there, and I can see the thing about Michael Fisher is I really liked his prep tape, and if you know, I heard a lot of people like saying, oh, he's a second or first round prospect based on his prep tape, and I'm going, well, he's pretty big for prep school. He skates pretty well for a big guy in prep school, and prep school is just not a very good level of play. And yeah. I'm watching him get the puck in the defensive end. If he has time to spool up, he just blasts up the ice and just carries it and does whatever he wants, which is fine, but that's not how you play defense in the NHL. And when it came time for reading the ice and moving the puck to other line mates and sort of working off the blue line, things kind of got a lot more complicated for me with Fisher. And when I saw him in the Hlinka, I'm like, okay, now I can see how he's not producing against better junior quality content players. Even if it's, you know, he's playing internationally at the beginning of the year and the prep school stuff was middle of the season that I was watching. Mm-hmm. I still watch him and I go, okay, there's an unrefined player here, but I don't know. I don't know if he's going to the USHL next year, but you stash him in junior and college for the next X years and see what happens with him. Like maybe you end up with, I'm trying to think of another prep school guy that is kind of similar to him. Like I heard a lot of people say, oh, he's the next Scott Morrow. And mm-hmm. I don't really see that out of him. I think Morrow's a more creative and skilled guy that doesn't really rely so much on just going end to end all the time. Like he does it in a variety of ways, whereas Fisher I find is much more of a carrier and all that, but he's fun. So at 76, I think at that range, like that's about where he was on average. I had him on my watch list, but that's only because I only had seen a little bit of him and I liked what I saw, but I thought he was kind of unrefined and needed some time. But in that range, like, again, I've said this to a bunch of people past 50 or 60 in this draft, like the number of players where I'm really sort of beating the table and being like, we need this guy, was really limited. Like it was pretty much Vladimir Gradinin and that's it. And past that point, if Michael Fisher's name comes up, like in terms of tools, I like where they picked him.
Yeah, he's going to college. I want to say Northwestern. I know two of the Sharks prospects are going to all the like half the team, half the prospects are going to college this at some point. You could see Mike Greer's NCAA roots really coming out with, you know, a ton of their players are going the college route. So before we get into one guy who made you kind of go, yikes, let's take a quick break. We'll take a quick break. Let you guys know, of course, about the Locked On NHL show. When you're done checking out this one, go check out Locked On NHL, especially, get you guys covered up as free agency is kind of winding down here and then start getting you guys ready for the next season. I was actually just on Monday's Locked On NHL show, so make sure you guys go check that out. All right. Which pick were you kind of like, are we sure?
So I feel like Sharks fans are kind of like baiting this discussion into Cameron Lund at 34. And that is a surprise.
He lit up the prospect, yes. Like everybody. Well, and I know it's 3-on-3 hockey, et cetera, et cetera. But he was, I like watching him on, I was like, oh, wow, yeah. This guy.
So. Yeah. Cameron Lund in open ice and like one-on-one is an impressive player. Like he, mm-hmm. you know, the thing with him is I watched him a lot at 5-on-5 and he and Ryan Green were kind of weird. Like the Green Bay Gamblers weren't very good, but both of those players, like I wanted to see more out of them. Like they were very inactive, very sort of quiet, but then you'd see little puck skill moves out of Cameron Lund, like putting pucks between guys' legs and just sort of floating around them and just finding little creative ways of getting around the ice that I really like to see. Like I watched Cameron Lund quite a bit this year, and even like not watching him, he would stick out as an opponent or as a player that, you know, but then when I would sit down and track him, I'm going, okay, like, where is this more often, right? So I guess if San Jose is looking at him and going, let's try to get him to be more confident and creative and like trust what he's got rather than sort of waiting for something to present itself and sort of dictating things a little more. I could see how at 34 it could work. I think there were a lot of better players, but in terms of at his best moments, Lund can be very talented. And I can see how in 3-on-3 he looked pretty darn good. But I mean, I think the one that I was kind of especially because a guy like Vladimir Gradinin feels right up the Doug Wilson Jr. alley. A guy like Jake Furlong at 140, I mean, again, it's 140th overall. You're not going to be like, oh my God, they busted their 140th overall pick.
Yeah.
But I really felt that it kind of was baffling to me that a guy like Gradinin was falling that far. And then, of course, Carolina snags him like 15 picks after this, right?
Yes.
So, you know, maybe there was a directive from San Jose ownership or whatever being like, we're not touching Russian players because they didn't draft any. And they have in the past, if I'm not mistaken, they've drafted a couple, but not that many.
Yeah.
But I look at Jake Furlong and I just see a CHL defender, right? Like I just see a guy who is capable of producing at the Q level. And Halifax has had some defense like this in the past, right? Like I'm trying to think, there was a guy, Jared McIsaac was kind of a similar vibe for me where he was pretty highly touted. Not that Furlong has been, but I can't really complain that much about Bisted. I see the appeal with Lund. I really liked the Havlid pick. I'm curious about Fisher. Mason Beaupit, you know, if you think you get a goalie, whatever, fine, whatever. And like Muldoni is a decent swing, I guess, based on what I've seen. They love drafting prep school guys late. Barnett, I was watching him the other day. I don't think there's much there, but if there is... He's a big dude.
Yep.
You know, I see a bit of tools there for him, but there's just, I don't know. It isn't very often that re-entry, he's one of the older draft eligibles this year, but like it isn't very often that you see guys that struggle to score in the BCHL turn out. But, you know, 4 years in college and we'll see. And then who's this last guy? Reese Lombach.
Story, local kid. So that's kind of,
which is fine. And it's 217, right? Like who gives a crap? So I would say like, especially cause there was a guy on the board where at 140, I'm going, we should probably draft this guy in Gradinin. And there might've been other guys that I might've wanted to swing on later than that. But I don't know. Furlong's probably the guy that sticks out to me is like, maybe you could have changed gears a bit.
All right. You were in Montreal. So let's talk about, what was the draft experience like? Because, I mean, on TV, it seemed like it was, especially that first round, it was obnoxiously loud, like amazing vibes, all that. What was the actual draft like?
It was awesome. It was, I highly recommend going if you can to the next one.
We don't even know where the next one's at. I mean, it was a little, right? They haven't announced
it. There were rumors flying around at the draft. I can't confirm it, but there were rumors of Nashville, but I don't know if that's like
Nashville would be amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if someone just heard that. Cause I remember just like someone mentioning it and then it kind of just started spreading a bit and I'm going,
Scouts confirms.
That's the thing. It's like, is this what being an insider is like? Like you overhear people saying things and then you're like, I don't know if this is true or not. And then you ask some people and they're like, well, I've heard the same thing. It's like, well, did they hear it because they overheard it at the coffee shop or did they?
Everybody all heard, overheard one person
like,
saying
it. Did some GM go, man, I'd love to have a draft in Nashville. Like, is that there, you know, but I haven't seen anything concrete, but it was great. I mean, I think with the first overall pick being Montreal's and being it in Montreal, it was just like, you could like taste the tension in the air, right? Like, It was pretty amazing. Like it was really hard to sort of explain. And then once you stepped into the Bell Center and once people started, you know, especially once there were like little bits of chatter of being like, there people are saying that it might not be Shane Wright going number one. Like once that started to spread, there was like this, the air kind of heated up a little, like you could feel sort of people breathing more, you know what I mean? Like it was kind of weird. And then when the first pick went off the board, I didn't actually see it happen. I was in the media concrete underground bunker that they had us in, but you could hear the crowd. I have never in my life heard people go through so many different emotions in such a short period of time. Like there was this, like, it was like someone had died for like a tenth of a second. And then it was like the person who had died came back to life immediately.
Undertaker coming out of the grave.
Exactly. And then, it was like as if the person who had died and came back to life also started like just vomiting $1 million bills that are legal tender. And everyone's like freaking out. losing their minds. Like, it was amazing. And people went nuts. And you heard the Ole chants pretty much immediately once Slafkovský was walking around and doing the interviews with the people at the various TV stages. He couldn't go anywhere without fat fans following him around. It was like, welcome to Montreal, man. Like, welcome to Montreal. And it was pretty amazing. It was a really, really cool experience. I mean, I got a little starstruck. I walked to the bathroom. I came out of the bathroom. Roberto Luongo walked by me and went into the bathroom, and I kind of had to do a double take. And I'm going, was that Roberto Luongo? And I was like, hey, that was a big man. Like, you underestimate how big NHL athletes are, especially goaltenders, but that was a big man. And I was like, oh, okay. This is real. Like, this is happening. And it was very, very weird, but awesome experience for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I went to kind of similar thing where I went to Summer League, like NBA Summer League a couple years ago, and just like walking around, and you just see like NBA players and former NBA players just walking around the concourse like it's no big deal type of thing. But yeah, I mean, it was the vibe on TV was very much like, oh, it's almost like playoff hockey, but like for a draft type of situation where it was just like, yeah, Jackson says hi. So what was, of course, you were there with a bunch of the of your draft buddy friends. What was the best thing you ate while you were in Montreal?
Ooh. Okay, so after round one, we didn't get out of there until like 11:30. So we were on the train, and one of the Dauber writers, I can't pronounce his last name, I'm really sorry if he's watching, but Hadi, met him a couple of times in Montreal, and he lives in the neighborhood where we were staying, and he's like, oh, you got to go to Décarie, which is this like poutine and hot dogs and cheeseburger diner dive. And I'm going, okay, sure, I'll go. And I tried to go one night after the NHL media party, and I didn't have any cash on me, and they did not take cards, and I did not see the ATM mounted to the wall. But we went there after the round one, and I had two hot dogs and a poutine from there, and I crushed it at like 1 a.m. And it was, I honestly, like, me and another guy we were staying with, like, we both woke up in the morning and we felt identical. It's like, I don't know if I'm full from last night or hungry or nauseous or like, it was almost like a hangover, but nice. But we weren't drinking the night before. So it was very strange, but I don't regret it at all. It was greasy. It was messy. It was awesome. But you know, you got to do something like that. And it was only like $12, which you can't buy anything for $12 in Canada anymore.
Oh, that's great. Actually, that kind of outside this, well, it's no longer the Staples Center. I think it's Crypto. I don't know what they call it anymore.
Crypto.com Arena.
Crypto Arena or whatever. They have these like hot dog stands, you know, where it's like people, you know, like families and stuff, they're cooking them. And of course, they're not legal. So, you know, they're out there cooking them. And then whenever the cops come by, like they have to scatter, but everyone stays in line because they know they're going to come back in five minutes. But literally the best hot dog I've ever eaten was outside the Staples Center one time. So, yes, it's those like late night where you're just like, I'm going to feel this in the morning, but it's literally the best meal you've ever eaten type of thing. So
did they accept Ethereum at those? Do you think you could use your Bitcoin wallet? And
this was a long time ago. It was like all cash type of same situation. Okay. So
well, there you go.
All right. Well, I'll get you out on this way, way, way too early 2023 draft. Who's your top five?
Oh geez, you're just whipping that one out, eh?
Yeah.
Let me take one moment and I'll open up my
document here. Connor Bedard.
I mean Connor Bedard. I think right away, like again, this is extremely early. Connor Bedard is my number one. I can't really see anything.
He just turned 17.
And he just turned 17.
Ridiculous.
The guy doesn't really have much of a supporting cast in Regina anymore, especially I think because Riker Evans is gone, or at least probably will be. I mean, if he's going to, he could score like 70 goals. I've seen that kid score goals in ways that I've never seen an NHL player score goals. I watched him score a goal once. He was skating along the blue line, and his body was basically facing the boards, but he pulled the puck back with his body still towards the boards and just whipped it, and it went top shelf from like the blue line. I've never before seen that in my life.
He was in the penalty box and he scored somehow.
Basically, yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, he's just an unbelievable goal scorer with just unbelievable sense for the game. It's just insane. I think
he's
Adam
literally
Fantilli,
gonna be 17 when he gets drafted, like not even 18 when he gets drafted,
and he's super young. Yeah, he's super young. I mean, I think Adam Fantilli is going to be a guy that is a lock for me at two.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Adam Fantilli. I think in terms of like a hockey player's hockey player, like there's, you know, usually I'm the kind of person who looks at a big power guy and I'm going, maybe he's not super valuable. No. Adam Fantilli is the man. He's a beast. And I get the feeling he's just going to be a rock solid, excellent hockey player. Mm-hmm. I also, in my top five, I actually have Matvei Michkov at 4. I've seen Michkov quite a bit. He's a really gifted goal scorer with a lot of skill, but there's more to the game than that. And I want to see more in that area. In terms of guys that I think are in that sort of group with him, I really like Leo Carlson. Like, he's kind of like a mini Fantilli in Sweden. Mm-hmm. He's already playing against men, had a pretty good year this year. But again, last year I got all up in arms about Elias Salomonsson, and he kind of fell apart this year a little bit. But I think other than that, Alex Cernik and Zach Benson and Otto Stenberg are also forwards that I think really have stood out for me in the viewings I've seen, especially Alex Cernik. And there's a defenseman who's also extremely young in the WHL that I actually really liked as well watching in the prep. You know, again, this was also very brief viewings of the 2023 class when I'm bored, but Caden Price with the Kelowna Rockets is a guy that I've really liked when watching him. But I mean, to me, next year, the show for me that I can tell right now is Bedard Fantilli. Like, that's who you're losing for. Michkov, I think we'll see. I think he's an interesting player to watch. I mean, obviously he's extremely talented, but I think the hype with him is a little bit, you know, there's certain things that he's really good at, but we'll see where he is. But I'm already kind of excited about next year. It's a really interesting group of players. It's hard not to dive too deep, but
you're ready to
go. Let's not go too far now. I don't know about that. Let's not go too deep. I haven't even finished my coverage of 2022 yet, which is frustrating, but we're getting there. But it's an interesting group, and I'm looking forward to getting into it. But you might need to ask me again in like late August. Then maybe I'll be a little more excited.
All right. Well, you've said and done it all. Where can the people find you? What do you have coming out next?
Yes. So I actually have to reshoot all my draft recap videos. So I'll do that once I'm back in my basement next week. So those will be coming out probably middle of next week through late next week, especially for patrons first. You can also find my work on twitter.com/scouching, but it's probably going to be relatively quiet unless those videos are coming out for now. youtube.com/scouching as well. You can support me directly on Patreon at scouching there as well, or the YouTube membership program accessible through every video. There's tons and tons of perks you can check out at the tiers that are there. So check them out. And if you like, you can sign up wherever you want.
Also, check out Scouching's new sewing business where he will mend your clothes. He's working on quilting. Yeah. Oh, boy.
I've got a very miniature... I didn't break anything. I've got a very miniature model of something I think my mom is making. It's very beautiful. It's very lovely. Nice. But I like that I have a tiny little torso of a person in this room with me.
That's good. Yes. It's not... I know my mom was a big seamstress as well. And it's sometimes really creepy when you have the little mannequin
She has a person-sized mannequin that she's like shaved down to her proportions. And she stuck a bunch of her sewing needles in it. So it looks like something out of like... what was that movie with Hellraiser?
With Pinhead,
with Pinhead, it was a little unsettling going downstairs as a kid and seeing that hanging in the darkness. It was a little, mm-hmm.
And look how you turned out. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
You're living, that's why you stay in the basement.
Yeah, I just stay in the basement all day.
Thank you, Will. Of course, you can find the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Locked On Sharks. You can also listen wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Odyssey. Please leave a review. I got a bunch of nice reviews. I'll probably read those later this week, including one from Japan. Locked On Sharks, big in Japan. And then, of course, the show is on YouTube. Go subscribe there. You can find me on Twitter at @MyFryHole. Go check out Locked On NHL. And then tomorrow, Mikael Holmes to dive in on the newest Swedish boys. So make sure you guys are back for that. Bye, friends.